your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Everybody, once again, and welcome to the place where the cauldron is always stirring here on the Para-X Radio Network. Tonight's opening music was called Down in Yon Forest. It's a traditional Christmas carol dating back to the Renaissance era. And this time of year, you know it's inevitable to start hearing Christmas music, but at least I'm not jingle-belling you to death, and I probably won't. I'm just going to slowly ease you into the Christmas spirit. And speaking of spirits, great segue. There's that connection to tonight's show, spirits in general and their secret language. Now, my guest is author and psychic William Stillman, and he's an internationally known award-winning author of the Autism and the God Connection book trilogy that explores the aspects of spiritual giftedness in many people with autism. Since 2004, he's worked professionally as a psychic and spiritual counselor, and his accuracy in discerning the truth and making predictions that come to fruition has been, well, acclaimed by his clients as truly extraordinary. He specializes in identifying clients' gifts and talents, as well as aiding discarnate spirits to transition to the heavenly realm. He's also a healer and has been consulted on missing person and unsolved homicide cases as well. Now, tonight we're going to be talking about his new book, The Secret Language of Spirit, and that's all about understanding spirit communication in our everyday lives. And William, welcome.
Hi, Marla. Thank you so much for having me back.
Oh, like I told you a little while ago, the book was too good not to.
So glad you're pleased with it.
I am, and I think a lot of people are. I was looking at some of the reviews, and I was, you know, nosing around, and it's being very well received. And I'm glad that, you know, you said yes to coming back.
Well, it's a delight. Thank you. You know, that book came together very, very quickly over the summer. I was actually inspired to write it because I went to the movies. And I saw a movie called Arrival. Uh-huh. And I don't know if you saw that one with Amy Adams, and probably folks who are listening in will remember it. Mm-hmm. She plays a college professor who is a linguist, and she specializes in interpreting and translating uncommon languages. And she's tapped by the United States government and the Army specifically to help with decoding extraterrestrial communication. Mm-hmm. And it was done in such a realistic way, and it was so impressive and inspiring. And I thought to myself, you know what? I do that too. I do something very similar to that, because the language of spirit is a language that is cryptic and iconic and symbolic, because spirit originating in the heavenly realm, no one has a physical body, so nobody has a larynx or a voice box. So it's very rare that spirit communicates in ways that are audible and spoken verbally. They usually do it in ways that comes through as, you know, pictures and movies and words and phrases mentally. For me, they may make me feel something physically, or I may smell, hear, or taste something. And in doing work as a psychic and a psychic medium specifically for 14 years now, I've had to sort of figure it out on my own, and I have this lexicon of probably about 36 standard signs and symbols that I know what they represent and how to interpret them. So my job is really to translate a foreign language and interpret that into words that people will understand who are not yet as fluent as I am.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it comes to us in different symbologies. You know, I mean, some people are clairaudient, as you said, clairsentient, clair whatever, you know, the five clairs. And we all kind of have to interpret the things that we get and make sense out of it. I mean, all right, growing up, we all know Pig Latin, right? I mean, and we all know a variety of languages. I mean, I guess we start with Pig Latin, and then certain words and phrases in other languages have assimilated into English, you know, whether it be pop culture or slang or perhaps lyric to a song that we like. And they kind of float in the same way that the secret language of spirit does, but some people just don't tune into it to figure it out. I mean, you know, people take it for granted, and they're missing out on a lot, because if they just open their ears, and their brain, actually, they can hear what they've been missing all this time, correct?
You're sorry about that.
No, that's okay.
You know, this happens to me constantly in the work that I'm doing. Anytime I'm doing an interview by Skype or even on the phone, or sometimes when clients are recording their sessions with me, the recordings don't take, or, you know, there's all kinds of electrical disturbances. So,
right. Yeah. We're used to that in this world, in the metaphysical world, that does happen. I mean, lots of times I love it when you're talking about something a little bit negative. You start getting static. You know, it's just like, okay, we better move on. But yeah,
but,
okay.
You know, in the book, I use the analogy of, you know, of us have at some point or another taken a second language in school. And whether it's, you know, French or German or Spanish.
Right.
And, you know, for the time that you're learning it, it makes sense, and you can make that leap between your native tongue and the foreign language, because you're sort of developing this skill of equating this equals this. But then, you know, the old saying, use it, you lose it. And so I think that's true also for being attuned to the ways in which spirit communicates to us, and being aware and conscious of those little signs and signals that are around us on a regular basis.
Yeah, and they're around us for a reason. We should pay attention, or, you know, at least acknowledge them and then try and pay attention. Yeah. Well, you know, it was funny, because as I'm reading, I started reading the book, and I thought, you know what, he wrote this book for two reasons, either one of these reasons. One, that your clients are always complaining that they never hear from spirit, or they don't know how to listen to them. Or you hear from frustrated spirits that we among the living don't know how to listen. So was it a little bit of this and a little bit of that too, as well as the movie kind of kicking it in for you? Okay.
I think you might have to try to call me back on the phone.
Okay. Did you hear my question? So you could think about that while we get
ready. No, I'm sorry. I didn't.
Oh, all right. Let me ask you the question again.
Could you repeat it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then Sarge, be on the thing, and we'll quick do this. I said I was guessing that the book was written either because your clients were always complaining that they never hear from spirit, or they don't know how to listen, or you hear from frustrated spirits that we living people don't know how to listen. So, you know, it could be one of those two, and maybe something other than the movie as well. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Sorry.
Marla, it was none of the above.
Oh, it was, okay.
I ended up writing the book because when I was reclaiming my personal spiritual gifts and talents, it was a very much a protracted process, and I was figuring it out on my own by myself. And all of the folks that I was reaching out to were not responding to me, because I wanted to know if what I was going through was typical or common for folks who are emerging and evolving in the way that I was, and nobody would help me. Mm-hmm. And so I really had to figure it out all on my own, and it was a lot of trial and error. And I thought, you know, I don't want for other people to feel as though they're without a resource if they are at a point in their lives when they are becoming more conscious and aware, and they are desiring of exploring their own personal spirituality. And I wanted them to know some of the things that they should be looking for and piecing together and trusting. And that's why I wrote the book.
Okay. That makes good sense. Now, you began the book with a much needed chapter called Understanding Heaven. And that's something that is so widely interpreted by billions of people that I'm not sure there are two people alive who have the exact same thought of what, where, and how it all comes together. And, of course, there are those that don't believe in heaven at all. But so let's talk a little bit about that.
I would love to talk a little bit about that. I think that one of the things that we need to keep in mind is that when you are consulting someone who is intuitive, the information that's coming through that person is going to be shaded and colored by his or her own points of reference, mm-hmm. and what they have been exposed to and how they have lived their lives. And that's the neat thing about being human, is that what's coming through me is going to be different from what comes through Marla, because it is being filtered through this channel that is uniquely who you are. Mm-hmm. And so while I can't say that I know 100% that everything that I write about heaven is spot on accurate, I think that it is probably a generalization that's in the ballpark of what is, I'd like to think, authentic. Mm-hmm. What I have written in that chapter about understanding heaven was gathered over a number of years by virtue of dreams that I have had, mm-hmm. visions that I've had in meditations, and information that has been made known to me through private consultations with clients, and information that comes when I am working with an audience. Mm-hmm. And so it was sort of stitched and cobbled together from a variety of sources. And it's a topic that fascinates me personally, mm-hmm. and I find it very intriguing. And, you know, what's really curious is after I've written about some of the things that are in that chapter, I come to find out that there are other people who are very sensitive who are able to validate them.
Okay. Well, and you know, in our world here, the validation is really important, because, you know, we trust that what we hear and what we get is true, and we believe what we pass on to others, but it's that validation that kind of kicks it in, that kind of seals the deal in our minds, I think, because I don't think anybody's 100% sure of what they're seeing, what they're hearing, what they're saying, unless somebody validates it.
Right. And we really won't know for 100% sure until we all get to where we're going someday.
There we go, for sure.
And then we'll know. But, you know, the interesting thing is that, you know, we are each as unique and individual as each individual is unique. We all have, you know, a very specific DNA. Right. And I think that concept of free will, as it relates to our uniqueness, carries with us when we transition to the heavenly realm.
Oh, I agree.
And so I think that it will still continue to be filtered through our own personal energy form, even though there's a general template there. Mm-hmm. But I think that it will also be open to interpretation. I think we still have free will.
Oh, absolutely. And kind of a question from the chat room just came up. Cece says, are you saying that the intuitive symbology is what determines the reading?
The intuitive symbology, as it is interpreted personally and individually by each sensitive or intuitive or psychic. So what I'm saying, Cece, is that I'm going to naturally and without helping it, put my own sort of take on it, my own spin on it, in an effort to be authentic and to communicate as truthfully as I can. But it cannot help but to be tinged with my experiences and my communication, because it's all based on points of reference. In other words, spirit can't show me things that I wouldn't understand or wouldn't know because I haven't been exposed to it. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a real quick example of that.
Yeah.
When I am preparing for an event, when I'm preparing for meeting with individual clients, I like to go to an antique mall and walk around, or I like to watch the Antiques Roadshow, or I like to watch American Pickers. Because you get exposed to a lot of different stuff, and it's all in one space.
Mm-hmm.
And so one weekend, I was watching the Antiques Roadshow, and there was a woman on who had an ancestor, a great-great-grandfather, who had served in the colored infantry during the Civil War. Mm-hmm. Now, I had never heard of this before. There was an entirely segregated regiment of African-American men who served in the Civil War, and it was called the Colored Infantry. Well, I thought that was very intriguing. Mm-hmm. 48 hours later, I'm in a private session with an African-American woman, and I said, there's a father figure in spirit that just stepped forward, and he says that he served in the Colored Infantry. And she said, yes, that's my great-great-grandfather. She knew exactly who it was. And we went on from there. Now, 48 hours prior to that session, I wouldn't have had that point of reference to know to identify that.
Right. Yeah. They work in mysterious but wonderful ways, don't they?
It's beautiful. It's amazing. And I, like I said, I am personally interested and fascinated by all of this. And I'm learning new things all the time as a result of what comes through.
Well, yeah, I think that's part of the plan, and I always think that if we can't learn anymore, then we should kind of dig a hole and jump in, because that's what life is all about. We have to continually learn and grow, and if you
not
have...
Not everybody does.
Well, yeah, I know, but they miss out on a whole lot, don't they?
They miss out on a whole lot, and they end up painting themselves into a corner.
Well, we were talking about this on my show, I think it might have been last week, about young spirits versus old spirits, you know, young souls, old souls.
Yes.
And, you know, the old souls are the ones that do know that they need to keep growing and learning, and the young souls are just here. I mean, it's like a kid, you know. Yes. Oh, I'm here. What do I do? You know, I haven't figured this out yet, but okay, let's do it, you know. So.
Well, I write about that briefly in the book, who's an old soul and who's a young soul. And I say that the young souls are the adolescents of the spirit world.
Mm-hmm.
So they tend to be very self-absorbed and a bit reckless. And they tend to make the same mistakes repeatedly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they don't learn as easily.
Yeah. And I, you know, I guess they're not supposed to, but yeah, it is kind of, well, to me anyway, I was saying it's pretty obvious when you run up against a young soul, it's like, okay, calm down, don't pull your hair out because it's not going to work out the way you think it is. You know, you just have to have patience and understanding there.
Well, there's also a little bit of arrogance there. And I have certainly met people who have, upon first meeting them, proclaimed themselves to be very old souls.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's a big red flag.
Yes.
And they are, in fact, very young souls.
yeah, I know. Uh-huh. It's, you know, I mean, this is the way the world go around. And we, as whoever, whatever type soul, young, medium, or old, we are here to integrate ourselves with each other. Because it's always constantly a learning process. The young learn from the old maybe learn things from the young, the ones in the middle are kind of on both ends having a good time. You know, it's just that's the way it's supposed to be. You know, we learn patience. Yeah.
Yes, but the oldest souls I have found tend to be those that are in circumstances that are really humiliating and disparaging.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to live a very oppressed existence oftentimes. They tend to die rather early on in life, and yet their passing has profound meaning for those around them, such that it alters the course of people's lives for them having been in the world and occupied the space that they did.
Mm-hmm.
Short a period of time.
Yeah, that was their mission, if you want to call it that, to be here to affect those lives. And you know, it's marvelous the way things work. And there's so many layers to peel back and try and understand. And this is where the learning and growing and the open-mindedness comes in.
Absolutely, Marla. So I think that none of us can say that we are the experts on the subject or the expert on what happens when you take your last breath. It's really all open to our individual interpretation. And I think you have to go with what makes sense for you in the moment. And that can always change. And you can always be open to redefining that as you learn and grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's what it's all about. Now, I want to address the elephant in the room that really needs to be talked about, because people see this either black or white. They do have the capability to understand the language of spirits, and some don't. You know, they say they absolutely cannot, and others say they absolutely can. And then, you know, you go into the realm that some people just don't know they can and don't want to use it. I mean, it's my opinion that everybody has that capability, but not everybody has the desire. Is that kind of close to true in your mind?
Well, it is what I believe, yes.
Okay, all right, good.
You know, I think that not one of us is born without having our destiny pre-programmed into us.
Mm-hmm.
And with gifts and talents inherent to us uniquely already programmed into us. So whether you choose to avail yourself of those gifts and talents is entirely up to you. And some people might spend their entire lives trying to figure out what those gifts and talents are.
Mm-hmm. And there's
I think it does a disservice to attempt to foist your way of believing in spirituality upon someone mm-hmm. before they're ready to hear it. That's why I think it's unethical to approach someone on the street, a stranger, and go up to them and say, I need to tell you such and such that I'm getting psychically or intuitively, because mm-hmm. not everyone welcomes that. Not everyone wants it, and not everyone is open to hearing it. Mm-hmm. So I think, and I talk about that also, I think we need to be very careful and very respectful in how we communicate that from one to another.
And I think on along those lines, another question in the chat room, knowing that you deal with autistic children, for example, and there is a chapter in the book that we'll talk about in a minute, but the question is, are the interpretations or communications the same?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
When dealing with someone that is autistic.
Because the assumption is that there is a defective intellect?
Not necessarily, but just maybe the way, and this is why we're going to talk about that chapter, about, you know, the mental illness and autism and dementia, because I think what she means is they see things differently, like we all see things differently, you know, but maybe the language is even more different than we can imagine.
Well, I think the expressive language to put words to what it is that some folks are being exposed to is what's hindered in among folks with autism, specifically, since that was the question, mm-hmm. because about half of all those folks are simply not wired for speech, mm-hmm. how they're designed.
Right.
And even so, can you imagine being made privy to aspects of the heavenly realm or the spirit world that are so extraordinary, so profound, and almost beyond our earthly comprehension, yeah. and then trying to put language to that, it's going to come out in a way that probably sounds like nonsense or gibberish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, and she also said, she says not defective, but some autistic people are very gifted in some areas, mathematics, music, you know. So, again, a different grasp on interpretation that we all have.
Yeah, I mean, there have been times when I've been sitting in a room with people with autism, and they're passing a joke back and forth the room, but mm-hmm. nobody's saying a word.
Mm-hmm.
I've been sitting with people with autism who don't speak but will type and will say, my guide just walked in. He's standing in the right-hand corner of the room.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll report seeing an angel, those kinds of things. So I think it's all, you know, I don't think it's the autism specifically so
right.
much as it is some people are just intensely sensitive and vibrating yeah. at a different frequency than the average person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. That
and
makes
so they might be
sense.
More susceptible to perceiving things that are seen but also unseen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they probably don't.
If that makes sense.
No, it makes absolute sense. And it's probably similar to they haven't been exposed to the filters that some of us are exposed to. You know, you know, that's not true. There's no such thing as, you know, we hear this all the time, right?
Right. Well, that's why I think children tend to be more open
yeah.
for not having those filters imposed upon them or mm-hmm. self-imposed. You know, when you
right.
reach a certain age, you start becoming a little more sophisticated. So the curious thing, relative to that specific chapter in the book about autism and mental illness and dementia is that, mm-hmm. you know, there seems to be some commonalities there in ethereal or spiritual experiences, if you want to call them, that oftentimes get misunderstood or misinterpreted or clinically defined as something pathological rather than something spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think it might be a matter of, you know, that a tear in the veil, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
and people slowly being made privy to something uncommon to the average person, and then trying to put language to that is next to impossible. And so it comes out in ways that sound perhaps very nonsensical or irrational.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And you know, as we're part of this discussion, as we're talking, that there is much more to spirit speak, as you refer to it, than just something even written or spoken. And so let's talk a little bit more about the silence and the symbols and other methods that we communicate with them by, including dreams.
Mm-hmm. Well, talking about signs and symbols, again, that's probably going to be unique to each person as they begin learning this new language and they begin deciphering and decoding what's what based on how that person receives information. And that's the other neat thing about being human, is it's most likely going to manifest differently in you than it does in me.
Mm-hmm.
Based upon one or more combination of the clairs,
right,
that you mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So I tend to be a very visual person anyways, and so mm-hmm. clairvoyance for me is really strong.
Mm-hmm.
So I get a lot of visuals in my head.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be clear in letting people know this is not something that manifests in three dimension right in front of me. It's impressed in me telepathically.
Exactly.
Mentally. So I'm seeing,
yes,
in my third eye a mental image of something. And I talk about that in the book. I give a lot of examples of what that will be. And those examples are drawn from that standard lexicon that I have, that I've developed over time.
Mm-hmm.
Through trial and error, and I said there's about three dozen symbols. So, for example, if I'm shown howdy doody,
mm-hmm.
then I know that's someone who had a relatively happy upbringing and a fairly carefree childhood.
Oh, wow.
Now, a 30-year-old is not going to know who howdy doody is. So I have to be able to say, you know, oh, this is not the marionette that was popular in the 50s and 60s on television. This,
right,
means I'm assuming you had a very carefree childhood and, you know, very few worries or concerns.
Mm-hmm.
When I see two rams that come together and lock horns and butt heads, that to me is my symbol for conflict and friction and tension within an immediate family.
Huh. That makes, yeah. Yeah.
So yes, it's really intriguing and very interesting. And, you know, some of them took a little bit longer to figure out than others.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about being clairaudient, and I do get things through that channel as well.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my favorites is whenever they play for me Frank Sinatra singing "I Did It My Way," that's my symbol for someone who was very fussy, very particular,
mm-hmm.
And oftentimes very controlling.
Yeah. Yes.
But you see, these points of reference that I'm giving to mm-hmm. you as a 55-year-old man are not going to be the same points of reference for someone who's half my age.
Right, exactly, because I could relate to every one of them before you said what they represented. I got it, you know, but
right.
Somebody that's...
So that's where the interpretation piece, right, comes in.
Yeah, it's just kind of interpreting symbols. You know, maybe for people, they'll get different symbols for different instances.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it may be the same thing they see, but it might be different given the situation. I mean, it's not an easy thing to explain, but if you live with it, you do it, you learn it, you accept it, it does become clear after a little while, for the most part. Right?
Well, in the Secret Language of Spirit, I talk about that concept, and it really is a form of shorthand. And the really curious thing about all of this symbolism and iconography is that as a culture worldwide, we are gradually shifting more and more toward communicating with one another in the way that spirit speaks. Mm-hmm. And it's called emojis.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Now, believe it or not, I don't use a cell phone and I don't text message. But I'm well aware that, you know, I'm probably one of 17 people left in the country that does not. But I know that there is just a very broad range of imagery and symbols that people, particularly teenagers, throw back and forth all day long. And there's becoming less of a need for written words. And even the written words are done in shorthand. Like Y-O-U as U and A-R-E as R, the letter R. And
right.
So on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, also, I think words, because of our modern technology where people are texting so much and everything, I think sometimes that the spoken language is getting a little bit obsolete as well because, you know, most people have their nose in their phones and they're just texting back and forth and, you know, there's no need to talk. And, you know, I'm the one that at some point will say, please, can we get on the phone and talk? Really? I don't want to keep typing this out, you know. But talking may be a lost art soon.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing, a point that I make in the book is that people's spelling is horrendous anymore. And I've seen even in, you know, professional pieces that are written by journalists on the internet, just astounding typos and misspellings of words. But nobody seems to care because it's all about the immediacy of the information and understanding what's being communicated and the context in which it's being communicated isn't always as important. And so it's going to get really interesting, I think, over the next several decades because you have to consider what's the next step beyond all of the abbreviations and the shorthand and the images. And just what you said, you know, are we going more dormant with respect to our spoken language? And is the next step really sort of a swapping of similar communications, but mentally by telepathy?
Yeah, and in a way, I mean, that's kind of amazingly wonderful. But we lose, on one of the shows, I don't remember which it was, but my guest was talking about the fact that we lose our native urges, our native emotions, our native ways of doing things because things take over that make life easier. And actually, that was not my show. I was on somebody else's show. We were talking about that. But I digress. It's just, you know, way back when we had talents that we didn't even think were talents. You know, we were people that could make medicine out of plants. We were people that could touch by healing. We could do all that stuff. And then over time, we lose those things because they're not used. And that's kind of the same thing about wordage and verbiage and spelling and all that. And as a writer, it drives me crazy when I'm on social media and people are not, I don't mind the abbreviations except when I can't figure them out because once in a while I can't. But the misspellings, it just, that's kind of like my pet peeve. I want to just like go and correct them. I want to get the red pen out and say, no, that's not it. It'll just drive me a little bit crazy.
Yeah. Well, it is concerning, especially when people don't really seem to care about it. But I could see at some future point entire books being written purely in symbols. You know, it's like Egyptian hieroglyphics.
Uh-huh. I mean, like everything old is new again, right? I mean, we're coming back around to that. Yeah.
So I think these things do come in cycles, and it would be the kind of communication that would be universally understood. You don't have to understand how to speak the language because the symbols are, for the most part, understood by all. But, you know, I don't mean to disparage young people. I do see more young people becoming intrigued with desiring to learn more about their own personal spirituality. They don't talk about God, which is interesting to me because that's the word that I use. They don't use that word. They talk about the universe. They talk about maybe a higher power, or they talk in terms of synchronicities or fate. But, you know, I don't care what you call it as long as you're working on figuring it out and you desire to connect with like-minded people to serve the greater good. I'm all for it.
Yeah, that makes a great difference as to where we're going and what shall become of us. I want to touch on dreams for just a minute because we hear about spirits coming to us in dreams with messages, but there are those who chalk that up to an overactive subconscious mind or, you know, just it not believing it. So you're talking about dreams as a common vehicle which spirits use to communicate with us. So who do we know that is a spiritual communication rather than our own mind? And, you know, it could be wishful thinking on our part when we dream of somebody that we love and they come back and, oh, I dreamt of so-and-so, you know, last night they came back to see me. Well, it could be that. They could have had a message, but it could have also been our subconscious. So how do you determine the two?
Yeah, and I'm glad you asked that question, Marla, because it does come up a lot in my work. And the spin on it is I keep having dreams of my dad, but he scowls at me and he won't say anything to me. Or I keep getting the impression that he's really angry with me, and I don't know what to do about that. And this comes up a lot. And what I tell people is, if your dad is where he should be in the heavenly realm, that he's transitioned successfully, then there is absolutely no reason for him to be projecting any kind of negative thought, negative emotion, or negative impression. Because that's not what they're all about there.
Right.
They've released all of that. Now, they can call it up for the purpose of role-playing exercises and so on. But that is most often someone's own personal psychology venting in the form of a dream, any remorse or any guilt that they have about not being there when that person passed, or worrying about whether the memorial service was everything that that person expected it to be, or concerns about dividing up the estate as per their last wishes. That's what that tends to be most often. And when I say that to folks, they have an aha moment where it all makes sense. Now, a true dream in which you are reunited with a loved one is going to feel so profound and so vivid and so loving that you actually wake up weepy because it just felt so real and like you were there with that person, and you were. And that is something that spirit orchestrates, and it's called a visitation. And in the context of that visitation, you may even remember just being present with that person and an exchange of warm and compassionate and loving emotion, but you don't recall anybody actually saying a word. Or you don't recall anybody actually talking and their mouths moving because the primary mode of communication in spirit is through telepathy, the you know, swapping of emotion, swapping of imagery. mm-hmm. thoughts and feelings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no.
So there's a distinction.
And I always say, too, if you feel as though you're having a meaningful conversation with that person, whether it's telepathically or verbally, however you see it, it's that meaningful conversation that is also kind of, in my mind anyway, a kind of a wake-up call that this is somebody actually there and you're not dreaming it, you know, you're not making it up.
So if you wake up feeling inspired, if mm-hmm. you wake up feeling empowered or feeling satisfied in mm-hmm. some respect with regard to your life, because that's why they would be coming through. They want you to succeed. They want you to feel happy and contented. They mm-hmm. want you to maximize your gifts and talents when you are ready to do so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they come. There's always a reason for coming back. I mean, I've mentioned this before that a friend of mine passed, and it was sudden. It was in, you know, an airplane crash, and there were no goodbyes. You know, it's all of a sudden you hear this person has passed, and so it was kind of And the day of his funeral, you know, that went as you would expect, and that night. He came to me in a dream, and it was very short and very sweet. He walked over to me and gave me a hug, and I could feel that hug. And then I woke up, you know,
beautiful.
So yeah,
a gift that is to you. Yeah.
Yeah. Nonverbal, beautiful. But to the point,
The other thing that comes up, Marla, quite often is someone will say, I was so close with my mother. And everybody else in my family feels like they've had a sign from her, and I get nothing.
Yeah.
And I tell folks, first of all, no one's entitled to anything. Nobody is guaranteed a thing. The second thing is that they want us very much to go on living our lives. They want us to continue moving forward. You know, we absolutely do not discontinue loving them and thinking of them. And right. it's that emotional bond that cannot be severed ever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's what connects us. But if someone is overwhelmed with grief, if someone is consumed by desperation, those are huge blockages that actually prevent spirit from being able to manifest in ways that I describe in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell folks, desire, not desperation, will work mm-hmm. in your favor, but let spirit find you. Let it find you when it will, and it will probably be when you least expect it.
Mm-hmm. And always kind of be open to it, you know, even in the back of your mind, not consciously every minute, you know, you're not going to be looking over your shoulder, but open up to that particular thing and just be open-minded and allow it to happen.
I will never forget a woman coming to see me, and she sat down, and her teenage son came through immediately, and he had passed from an overdose.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing out of his mouth, through my mouth, was, Mom, knock it off. But he said it in a way that was much more colorful, true to form.
Mm-hmm.
And what he was trying to tell her was she, every day since he passed, was constantly pulling on his energy, pulling on him, demanding from him a sign, a communication.
Right.
And he was telling her, just quit it, you know, give it a break, give it a rest.
Mm-hmm.
And I love you, but, you know, you need to keep moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I just kind of like it when you get those, when you have the stories about those kinds of messages, because it just, I think it solidifies the fact that people think a lot of the time and that when people cross over, they're not the same person. And, you know, you addressed that earlier on. So to hear that, you know, the kid saying the way he would have talked to his mom, you know, that just kind of proves the point that, you know, whether you're on the other side or here, you're still going to be the same person, like you said, the same DNA. And I think, it's kind of cool to think that we don't lose our edge when we go on the other side.
Well, it's one way that people would know to identify your personality. But I think you just made a really important point, Marla, that I would like to reinforce.
Sure.
Is I think it contributes to people having a fear of dying in that you either cease to exist or you become transformed into something that in real time you can't relate to. And what I have been shown repeatedly through people expressing their personality and spirit is that just what you said, you will still be you.
Mm-hmm.
You'll take the very best of who you are with you.
What about the worst? Do we leave it behind? Not really, do we?
Well, some of us, I think that's the spiritual throwdown.
Mm-hmm.
That's the challenge is, if you become wise enough and spiritual and open enough, mm-hmm. you have to reconcile your past.
Yeah.
And that may include bad behavior. And if you're able to do that while you're still here, I think you score points for that. But of course, not everyone that dies is a nice person. And I think that those folks have to do their reconciling when they get to where they're going. And
mm-hmm.
for some people, that's a process that is easier said than done sometimes. It is a very individualized process, but it is not something that is forced. It is something that the soul has to come around to understanding on its own in order to move forward.
Well, and I think, not to get into this is a good discussion for a whole new show, but people that are bad people that we consider bad, now, do you think they consider themselves bad? And I'm not talking about them thinking they're tough and a badass kind of thing. But do you think that people who do bad things always understand that they're doing bad things? Or is that the way they are wired? Is that what they believe, that they're doing normal things?
Well, so is it nature or nurture?
Yeah.
And I think that part of being human is that embedded within you is some semblance of a moral code. It may mm-hmm. be much higher for some than others, but I think that people who do bad things know they're doing bad things. They know that what they're doing is causing harm to themselves or causing harm to others. And sometimes those are the people that resist transitioning when the time comes, and that is what we call a ghost.
Mm-hmm. There you go. We're running almost at the end now, but I want to say that this book is an easy read. It's filled with stories that you've told a couple also to help illustrate the various aspects of spirit communication. And it's just, and I mentioned this to you before also, it's not a 500-page book. It's not written like a textbook, but there are so many things in there. Like, we didn't get to ethereal alignments. We didn't get a chance to talk about associative links in memory that kind of correlate to spirituality and things, to music and sense. So there are people listening. There are a million other things to this book than what we've just been talking about. We haven't even chipped the tip of the iceberg on this. So I want to suggest that anybody that's interested, and I think everybody should be, in learning how to communicate and listen to spirit, really should go out and get the book. And that being said, where can people find it, and where can people find you? And especially, if people want to come to you for a reading or whatever, throw stuff out at us.
Yeah. Thank you, Marla. I can't believe the time zipped by and an hour has passed already. So first, I want to say thank you. I'm so grateful to your interest in my work and for having me back on your program.
Oh, you're very welcome.
People can find me at williamstillman.com. That's STILLMAN. If they want to access my Facebook page, the icon is in the upper left corner of the homepage of my website. And every morning on my Facebook page, I put up an original inspirational quote that I receive in my prayer and meditation time.
Nice.
And I match that with a picture. So it might be a nice way for folks to start their day.
Yeah.
The book, The Secret Language of Spirit, is posted on my website in the Bill's Books section. You can read all about it. That also links directly to Amazon.com. It is just also available as an audio book, and they hired an actor to narrate it, so
nice.
you can listen to a sample of that on Amazon. It may also be available in bookstores nationwide.
Okay, great. Well, again, thank you so much for joining me tonight. We live, we learn, and you're a great teacher, so thank you for that.
That is a great compliment. Thank you so much.
And let's thank everybody for listening in tonight and for all those that are going to be listening on the podcast all week long and forever more. And until next time, everybody, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
This has been another edition of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Be sure to tune in next week at this same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2014. Moonlight Hall by Kevin MacLeod. Licensed through Incompetech.com.